Well, I didn't work with Steve terribly closely. I was kind of more junior when you know, when he was still here, unfortunately. But I mean, I think what we all learned from Steve is that attention to detail and that focus on making everything right and focusing on the product and the customer. And you know, you asked me before what's changed and what hasn't changed, and that's something that hasn't changed. I think that is very much one of the great legacies of Steve is that that's still there in the company.
Hallo und herzlich willkommen zu einer neuen Ausgabe von Handelsblatt Disrupt, dem Podcast über neue Ideen, Disruption und die Zukunft der digitalen Welt. Mein Name ist Sebastian Mattes und ich begrüße Sie wie immer ganz herzlich, diesmal allerdings aus der Hauptstadt, aus Berlin. Mein heutiger Gesprächspartner arbeitet für ein Unternehmen, das ansonsten nicht so für lange Gespräche bekannt ist. Ich spreche nämlich mit einem Vertreter aus der Top-Führungsriege bei Apple, nämlich mit John Ternus, dem Vorstand für Hardware Engineering, der für Produkte wie das iPhone, die Watch oder das iPad mitverantwortlich ist. Ich spreche mit ihm über seinen Weg bei Apple, sein erstes Vorstellungsgespräch, wie sich der Konzern über die Jahre immer weiter verändert hat und woran er gerade arbeitet. Zu seinen wichtigsten Themen gehört übrigens gerade Nachhaltigkeit und darüber sprechen wir auch in den nächsten 30 Minuten. Aber wir diskutieren auch, wie man Innovationen in einem Unternehmen organisiert, denn John hat so ungefähr an jedem Apple-Produkt mitgearbeitet, das sich aktuell auf dem Markt befindet. Und daran, was Apple jetzt anstelle von Intel-Chips in seine Geräte einbaut, nämlich eigenentwickeltes sogenanntes Apple Silicon. Das sind Prozessoren, die die Produkte noch schneller und noch effizienter machen sollen, auch bekannt unter dem Seriennamen M1 und M2 Chips.
Nach einer kurzen Unterbrechung geht es gleich weiter. Bleiben Sie dran.
Willkommen in der Zukunft der Technologie mit dem Handelsblatt Summit Zukunft IT. Seien Sie Teil der IT-Flagship-Tagung des Handelsblatts, bei welcher führende Köpfe der IT-Branche zusammenkommen, um die neuesten Trends und Herausforderungen der digitalen Transformation zu diskutieren. Vernetzen Sie sich mit Branchenführern und finden Sie Lösungen, die Ihr Unternehmen voranbringen. Exklusiv für unsere Podcast-Hörer sichern Sie sich jetzt 20% Rabatt auf Ihre Anmeldung. Besuchen Sie zukunft-it.jetzt und verwenden Sie den Vorteilscode PODCAST.
Und damit jetzt zu meinem Gespräch mit John Ternus, dem Vorstand Hardware Engineering bei Apple. Hi, John. Welcome.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
What brings you to Berlin these days?
You know, it's been a really interesting trip. We've been in a few cities across Europe this week, and you know, as you probably know, Apple is a very secretive company, and we tend to not talk about the things we're doing until after we've launched them. And this trip's a little bit different. We've been putting a lot of work into our sustainability goals and what we call Apple 2030, which I'm sure we'll talk about a bit more. And this is an area where actually we think it's good to be talking about it. And so it's been an opportunity this week to come here and meet with people, meet with kind of stakeholders and interested parties. We got a chance to talk to some students at TU Berlin earlier today, which was really fun, and just talk a bit about how we do what we do and why we do what we do.
Interesting. So we'll try to talk a little bit about secrets. So what did the students in Berlin asking? What kind of questions did they ask?
They were asking about. I mean, these are engineering students. They were asking a bit about what should they be working on, you know, as they study, and what should they focus on, which was great. They had some really insightful questions about, you know, how do we approach sustainability? How do we, you know, how do we manage our recycled materials? How do we track, you know, our carbon footprint? All of those kinds of questions. Mm-hmm. So it's really, really nice because you're seeing these engineers who are kind of, as I told them, they're the ones who are going to be building the future. They're going to be, you know, defining the future, and they're all really passionate about sustainability, which is I think a good reason for optimism.
So the big news at Apple this year was the Apple Vision Pro, what you call the breakthrough AR VR goggles you just brought out. What does that mean for the interaction with computers for us? So how is that changing the way we interact with machines?
I think we'll see. We announced the product, and we'll be shipping it early next year. And I think we've talked about this new vision of spatial computing, and yeah, I think there's a lot of exciting stuff to see in the future.
Have you spent much time with it yet?
I've had some time in it, yeah.
What do you think will be the use cases, the most use cases? What will you use it for the most? What do you think?
Probably not for me to say now and talk about. I think we've done our announcement, we've done the demos, and I think it's going to be, we've still got more of the story to tell.
You said you are traveling to Germany, not because these Vision Pro, you talk a lot about sustainability. So why Germany? You have a lot of suppliers here, I guess. You meet suppliers. What are your conversations with them at the moment?
Yeah, I mean, we do have suppliers in Germany. We actually have a substantial team in Germany. Mm-hmm. In Munich, we have a couple thousand engineers that are working on Apple Silicon, on power management and silicon, which is a huge part, quite frankly, of our sustainability story is the work we do in silicon design. I think it's just getting a chance to talk to people about what we're doing and how we approach the design of our products and how we think we can really make a difference here. Mm.
Can you talk a little bit more about what Apple is doing in Germany? Because you have thousands of engineers working from here. What are they doing here and why Germany?
Well, I think there's just tremendous talent. And I got to see some of the next generation of talent at the university today. I think Germany is a wonderful place for engineering talent. Mm-hmm. And in particular in what we have in Munich is a group with really deep expertise in silicon design and analog design, which is a particularly challenging field. And we count on them to be delivering, you know, the breakthroughs that you've seen in our Apple Silicon, you know, in our M series processors and iPhone processors, all of that kind of stuff.
Okay. Why are you building your teams here? Is that because there's a special kind of talent here?
Yeah, I think, I mean, at this point, Apple's very much a global company. We have kind of footprint all over the place. We have engineering all over the place. And one of the key ways to do it is to focus on where there is the right talent. And you're exactly right. In Munich, there's some tremendous talent that was kind of perfectly suited for the work that we were doing.
You're with Apple now since 2001?
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah.
So that's quite some time. So how has Apple changed during that time?
It's funny. In some ways, it hasn't changed at all, right? I think the way we approach products and focusing on the product and delivering amazing experience for our customers, that hasn't changed at all. I think probably the most profound change that I've seen is just the scale, right? When I started, I was working on our cinema displays, so our desktop monitors, mm-hmm. which were a relatively low volume product back then. We didn't build a whole lot of them. And, you know, now you think about how many iPhones and iPads and Macs we build, and that's changed. It's really changed how we work. We have to be much more rigorous in our engineering, because if you're going to build this much product, you're going to put it into the world, you need to make sure that the quality levels are, you know, unbelievably high. And so over those years, I've watched the quality of our products get better and better and better. And that's come from really deep, thoughtful engineering and analysis and making sure that that it's right before we ship the first one.
So you always worked as an engineer for Apple. How did the job itself change?
I have always worked as an engineer for Apple. I'm a mechanical engineer by background, and I came in our product design group. And I think, again, I think the change more than anything in engineering is the rigor, is the attention. We've always had a tremendous attention to detail on the design, but I think we've gone deeper and deeper and deeper into the detail of the engineering, and we've gotten farther into, you know, not just the design of the product, but the design of the components of the product and even the design of the materials in the product. And it's been really amazing to see that and to see such an incredible kind of growth of talent within the company. Mm. We're surrounded. I love going in every day to be surrounded by so many amazing people.
Can you give an example for this kind of engineering?
You know, a good one, and it's on the kind of topic of sustainability, is recycled material. Right. One of the key cornerstones to the work that we're doing is to try to use more and more recycled material. And one of the big ones is, as you probably know, we use a lot of aluminum. And several years ago, we kind of took upon ourselves this goal of building the MacBook Air out of 100% recycled aluminum. And as it turns out, that's a lot easier said than done, because we have very high standards for our material and for our aluminum. And so we want it to be beautiful, right? So we want really great surface finish and cosmetics. It has to be very strong, good thermal conductivity. And what happens when you bring in a recycled material stream, you're actually bringing in trace contaminants that impact the material properties. So if you were to just use recycled aluminum the same way, you'd end up with an inferior product. It wouldn't look as good, it wouldn't be as strong. But what we've done over the years, and this is kind of an example of going deeper and deeper into the engineering, is we've built this incredible material science capability. And we have a team of alloy engineers, and they were able to actually design an entirely new aluminum alloy that was able to kind of be more tolerant of some of those contaminants. And so the end result is we can bring in that recycled material stream with no impact to the cosmetics of the material, the strength of the material. And so we did that transition. And while I hope our customers were really happy and excited to know they were getting a product that was made of recycled material, if we hadn't told them, I don't think they would have known, because we didn't have to compromise at all. We made it the same. And that level and that depth of engineering certainly did not exist at Apple when I started 22 years ago. It's something that's been building and building over time.
What was the moment that sustainability became so important for Apple?
Yeah, it's funny. It's hard to put a finger on it, because I think, you know, in my time, I've always found that people at Apple are very passionate about the products. They're very passionate about their work and design. Yeah. And they also tend to be very passionate about the environment. And so it's always been a push within the team to build things that are sustainable and think about the environment. I think in recent years, we've gotten a bit more organized and focused with our 2030 goal, where we've kind of put this company-wide mandate that by 2030, we want to be carbon neutral across everything, manufacturing, the products themselves, the life cycle of the products, you know, all of that. And that's kind of brought a lens of focus to it that has been really, really helpful. I think the other thing, as I mentioned before, is we've recently kind of recognized that, you know, this is something we should be talking about. And because, quite frankly, if somebody wants to copy some of these ideas, that's great. That's great for everybody. So I don't think internally we suddenly decided we were going to, you know, change. I think we've always cared about the environment. I think we're just now in a position where we have a plan and we want to talk about it. And we're
you know, I'm just asking because for a long time there was a debate about why you can't change batteries at your iPhone and it's so hard to repair. That's a dimension for sustainability as well, right?
It is. And I think it's a you know, what we spend a lot of time focusing on durability and product longevity, right? We think that the end goal is to build a product that lasts as long as possible. And actually, in hardware engineering, that is our North Star, right? Mm. Like the thing that matters most to us is that we're building a safe and reliable and high quality product for our customers. And so by focusing on making designs really durable and lasting a really long time, you can keep that product can have a first life, it can have a second life, and you see it. If you look at the average iPhone after 3 years is worth 80% more than a comparable Android phone. Right? Like it retains its value because it's built to last. And so sometimes when we're always trying to make smart decisions about repairability, right? Last year, we redesigned the iPhone 14 to our mid-chassis architecture so that it was easier to repair the back glass, because mm-hmm. the back glass is something that can fail. And so we wanted to make it easier to repair that. But there's other parts of the product where focusing on the durability and the longevity is actually kind of the highest priority, with the ultimate goal that the product lasts as long as possible.
You have a degree in mechanical engineering from the University of Pennsylvania. Is that where you grew up?
No, I actually grew up in California.
Right.
Okay. And I went back to Philadelphia for college and then I came back.
And have you been a techie all your life? So started working on tech stuff when you were a child?
I've always been interested in technology, always been interested in computers.
What was your first wow moment with a computer?
Oh, I think it was probably our Apple IIc and hooking up, you could hook up
already
a TV
an Apple.
for a color screen and playing video games. I always liked video games. So that was probably a wow moment there. But I found in school, I really liked math and I really liked physics. And so that led me to mechanical engineering.
And then you came to Apple. Do you still remember your job interview?
I do.
how was that?
It was intense. I think I interviewed with 13 different people over the course of a couple days. I mean, it was fun. And actually, many of them who interviewed me, I still work with today. So it's pretty cool.
Is there something that is different in job interviews at Apple compared to other companies?
Well, I haven't interviewed in any other companies recently, so I don't know for sure. But I think, look, we're looking for obviously very talented people, whether they're engineers or not. I think across Apple, you know, the way we've built our company is we have kind of these functional organizations with great depth of expertise, and then we set things up so that collaboration between them is what enables the product. So we're always looking for, you know, top-notch engineers. And in my case, we're always looking for top-notch engineers. But we're also looking for people who are innately curious and want to learn more. You know, when I started at Apple, just kind of on the product design side, the first products I was making were plastic displays, right? And then, of course, we've evolved and the designs have changed and we've used more metal. And so had we focused on only hiring experts in making plastic parts, well, that wouldn't have helped us when we switched, you know, when we evolved to a new thing. So we're always looking for people who can become an expert in something new really quickly, who can learn, who are curious. And so I think that's a big part of what we try to get out of our interviews.
Is there one question from your first job interview at Apple that you still remember?
I don't remember the exact specific one, but it was a gentleman who was an amateur astronomer, and he was talking to me about making a homemade telescope and kind of the impact of thermals, basically, of expansion on the lenses, and how would you make a design that could be tolerant of that? I don't know why I remember that, but I do.
So you do a lot of interviews now yourself. You're looking for talented people. How do you find them? How do you find out in rather short interviews how talented they are? And what kind of questions do you ask to find out?
Well, I think the key is as I said, I interview with a number of people. You want to have different perspectives, right? Mm-hmm. We want to have different perspectives of the people we're talking to get a well-rounded view. I think, to be fair, we have a little bit of an advantage where I think talented people are often drawn to Apple. Yeah. And so they come to us and it's a matter of making sure we have a good fit and we go from there.
And the most important skill is that communication?
Yeah, I think that is huge. And actually, it's funny, I just told that to the engineering students at the university today, which is, you know, of course, as they're going through their program, they're going to become better engineers. They're going to learn engineering. But one of the things that I've found to be extremely important is communication, because to be successful when you're designing products like ours, it's a very multidisciplinary effort. And so it's inherently a collaborative effort. And so being able to, you know, excel in written communication, verbal communication, just getting your ideas across and figuring out how to work with people is super important.
Can you give an example for that? Because usually you think engineers are sitting there developing some products and something is coming out after months or years. So why is that so important?
It's actually one of the things that I think has been a great success for us. If you look at Apple Silicon, right? We design our own silicon. And I think we've traditionally been somewhat unique in that. And one of the great values of that is we can design the silicon for the products that we want to build, right? And so, you know, me and my team, we're working on the product side. We partner with Johnny Cerugi and the hardware technologies team. They, you know, they do a number of things, but part of it is designing and implementing our silicon. And so the ability of those teams to work together and to talk through, like, where are we going on this product? What do we need? How do we optimize? Like, that communication is so critical, because many of the decisions we're making, particularly on the silicon side, are quite, you know, they have quite a long lead time. And so that ability to communicate is essential to getting a great product.
And also, Apple has a very special organizational structure, right? Can you talk a little bit about how this is helping doing innovation?
Yeah. I think it's a good point. So as you know, we have what I would call a functional structure, right? So I'm responsible for hardware engineering. Mm-hmm. As I mentioned, Johnny's responsible for hardware technologies. So he's kind of building the technologies and my team is building the products.
What is exactly the difference between these two?
Well, like silicon, you know, silicon is like the Apple Silicon chip that goes into the product. So he's doing a tremendous amount of work to design and develop that component, that silicon, whereas my team's more focused on the overall phone that it's going to go into. But of course, to do that right, everyone's working together. And then you have software engineering, right? And operations, right? This incredible team of ours that can go out and build at the scale that we're at. And so that model, that kind of functional model, allows us to build an organization that's best in class and is really deeply technical and great at what they do, and then collaborate across. The other thing that it does really well is because we're not siloed across products, when we have a breakthrough or discover something new, whether it's a material or a design feature in one product, it can instantly be transported into another product. Mm-hmm. It's all the same team, right? Everybody knows what's going on.
There are no competing teams doing displays for iPhones or watch.
No, there's a display team, right? Yeah. And there's certain engineers one year that might be working on a phone display or, you know, a Mac display or something like that, but it's one team. And I think that's really powerful because it allows us to move all of our platforms together.
But still, you have to organize innovation somehow across all these fields. As a leader in such a company, how do you do that? How do you make people think outside the box all the time and to get better and better every day?
Yeah, I think a big part of it is having ambitious goals, right? And we like to tackle really, really hard problems. We were just talking about this earlier this week. One of the best ways to motivate a team of engineers is to tell them it's not possible, right? And so, we'll come in and say, hey, this is what we want to achieve on this product. And if you leave the goals at a high level and ambitious, then it's just really fun to watch the team find solutions. And often those solutions are not what you anticipated, right?
How do you find out if somebody is really innovative and can get new ideas? Are there certain questions you ask?
I think a lot of it is looking at what people have done and maybe it comes across in questions.
You said you try to find out if people are really hungry to get new ideas. How do you see that?
Yeah, well, sometimes you see it in the work that people have done before, right? And sometimes you see it in their interests, like outside of work, how varied are they and all of that. And then sometimes you just get a sense in a conversation, you can talk about a design problem or a technology and have that dialogue. And you get that sense that person is kind of thinking creatively about solutions. So, to some extent, that's why, like I said, we have multiple people talk to candidates and try to build that sense of them.
In Germany, everybody's talking about AI. I'm sure it's the same in the United States. What role does AI play in your job, in your everyday life, in the way you think about products?
I think it's a good question. I mean, there's certainly a lot of talk about AI right now, particularly generative AI. And I think it's an area that's evolving and changing. I think our approach to AI and ML is kind of in line with what we always do at Apple, which is what is the user experience? What is the opportunity we can create for a great product? And let the underlying technology, let the AI service that need, right? So that as long as we keep focused on that, I think we're going to continue to do great things.
Because I found it interesting that in your last presentations at the developers conference, AI wasn't a topic at all.
I think what we talked about was a lot of amazing features, many of which are enabled by AI. So again, it's I think customers want to have a great experience and they don't always necessarily want to know what is the underlying technology. Sometimes they do, but sometimes they don't.
So let's get back to sustainability. You want to be carbon neutral, you said, at 2030. Are you on track?
We've made a lot of progress. I think we have reduced our carbon footprint by 45% since 2015, which is pretty remarkable. And at the same time, the company's grown by 68%. So I think a big part of this was proving that we could decouple our carbon footprint from the growth of the business. And I think we've demonstrated that. But this is going to be hard. This is a big undertaking, right? And it's requiring the focus and the drive of the entire company to get there.
And what other fields you still have to solve to get there?
On a product side, I think we still have more work to do around recyclability, right? Mm-hmm. So we have recycled material. I think across our product line now, we're about 20% recycled material, but we want to keep driving that up. That's an important part of the circular economy and the ability to bring down that carbon footprint. Outside of the products, there's making sure there's enough clean energy on the grid. So, because what we want to do is we want to be zero carbon, including or carbon neutral for our customers' use of the product, right? So we need to make sure that they have the ability to have clean energy on the grid. So there's huge efforts around that. But it's an ongoing journey.
And can you talk a little bit more about recycling process? How does that work? And in what direction are you investing to get better at that?
Yeah, one of the things we've done, and I think it's been a few years now, and you may have heard of it, we have this recycling facility, kind of it's a technology development facility that's working on that very problem, which is how do you get the material back in the first place? And Daisy, our robot that was built.
From the Netherlands, right?
There's one in the Netherlands, yes. And there's one in Texas, yeah. And it's capable of disassembling iPhones, right? And iPhone's a very densely packed thing, and there's small amounts of really valuable materials in there, right? Yeah. And so Daisy was designed to be able to disassemble those and recover those parts. And so it's that level of work. It's also, as I talked about before, which is once you have the recycled material, making sure you can actually convert it, working with suppliers to make sure you can convert it into usable material, which, as I said, in the case of aluminum, was designing a new alloy. Other materials, it might be different, but it's all of that work that has to go into it and continue to push on technology and continue to work and push with our developers. Our suppliers, because we... You know, we need them for a lot of this, and in the work that we do with them, it's ultimately going to benefit everybody.
In Germany, there's a big discussion when it comes to precious materials like gold or rare earths about dependencies on special regions. Is that a topic for you as well? I mean, when it comes to sustainability, it's also important to think about, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think ultimately we need to be in a place where we can do less mining, right? Mm. And so that's where the recyclability becomes so important. And we've made great progress. We're recycling 100% of rare earth elements on a number of products right now, using 100% recycled rare earth elements on a number of products. And as we do more and more of that, that's going to kind of give us that flexibility to do.
Any plans for this circular economy?
I mean, that's core to our plan, yeah. Yeah. And I think, like I said, it's making sure that we've got the technologies to recover the material. Mm-hmm. It's making sure that we have the technologies to implement those new materials in the new products. I think that's core to what we're doing.
Do you see customers really asking for that?
I think it matters to a lot of people. I don't know how much it's driving the buying decision for everybody. I think we kind of look at it a different way, which is, as I mentioned before, you know, I mean, I can't speak for everyone, but certainly the people that I know well and work with every day at Apple are very passionate about this. And I think we feel this tremendous sense of responsibility, right? Mm. We build a lot of products. And so every little bit that we can improve, every little bit we can make more sustainable, can have a really big impact. And that's a pretty incredible opportunity as an individual to feel like you can have that impact, but it's also a huge responsibility. And so we're going to do it. And we think our customers are going to love it. And maybe some of them won't even know that we're doing it, but we're going to do it because it's the right thing to do.
In the last 2 years, at least in Europe, especially in Germany, we had a big debate about how the workplaces have changed. So how did the work change in Apple after the COVID crisis? Are people back in the office? Did you find different ways of working? Is everything back to normal like it was before?
I think we've adapted. I think everything is quite good. It's wonderful to be back in the office. We have a more flexible.
So does it mean everybody's back in the office, or
we're back 3 days a week, and then we have flexible work for the other 2 days. I think it's a model that's been working well, and we continue to kind of test it out as we go. But it's been great. It's been wonderful to be back in the room with coworkers and solving problems Very good.
Just talked to one manager in Germany, and he thinks because people don't come back in the office, there might be some innovation crisis in his company. Do you think that's a fair point to say when people don't sit together, work together in one place, at least for a couple of days a week?
I think it's a challenge. I think so much good comes from the interactions that are sometimes somewhat informal and ad hoc. And so I think it was important to get folks back. I think there is value and opportunity in some amount of flexibility as well, which is why we're kind of we're trying that out right now. But I think it's good, and I agree. I think it's important to have people together.
Nach einer kurzen Unterbrechung geht es gleich weiter. Bleiben Sie dran.
ServiceNow unterstützt Ihre Business-Transformation mit der KI-Plattform. Alle reden über KI, aber die KI ist nur so leistungsfähig wie die Plattform, auf der sie aufbaut. Lassen Sie die KI arbeiten für alle. Beseitigen Sie Reibung und Frustration Ihrer Mitarbeiter und nutzen Sie das volle Potenzial Ihrer Entwickler. Mit intelligenten Tools für Ihren Service, um Kunden zu begeistern. All das auf einer einzigen Plattform. Deshalb funktioniert die Welt mit ServiceNow. Mehr auf servicenow.de/AI4People.
We've talked a lot about sustainability, a little bit about Apple products, but what is your favorite Apple product?
Oh, you can't ask me that question. It's like asking me who my favorite child is. I have had the privilege of working on almost every type of product that we do, and everyone has I find as a user, everyone is amazing to use, and everyone as a engineer has its own unique challenges and exciting opportunities. So, yeah, I don't think I could pick just one.
You have worked with Steve Jobs quite closely, I guess, as well. Is there one thing you learned from him?
Well, I didn't work with Steve terribly closely. I was kind of more junior when when he was still here, unfortunately. But I think what we all learned from Steve is that attention to detail and that focus on making everything right and focusing on the product and the customer. And, you know, you asked me before what's changed and what hasn't changed. And that's something that hasn't changed. I think that is very much one of the great legacies of Steve is that that's still there in the company.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thanks for having me.
Und damit sind wir auch schon wieder am Ende von Handelsblatt Disrupt. Wie immer freue ich mich über Kommentare in der Handelsblatt Disrupt LinkedIn-Gruppe oder senden Sie mir gerne eine Mail. Die Details finden Sie in den Shownotes. Danke an dieser Stelle auch für die Unterstützung von Lukas Teppler und Regina Körner und Migo Fecke von professionalpodcast.com, dem Dienstleister für Strategieberatung und Podcastproduktion. Wenn Sie grundsätzlich immer auf dem Laufenden sein wollen, dann testen Sie doch gerne unser Handelsblatt-Vorteilsangebot. Damit lesen Sie die aktuellen Artikel plus alles aus dem Archiv für 4 Wochen für nur 1 Euro. Schauen Sie doch einfach mal nach unter handelsblatt.com/Mehrwirtschaft. Die Details dazu finden Sie in den Shownotes. Wir hören uns dann nächste Woche Freitag wieder. Bis dahin wünsche ich Ihnen interessante digitale, aber natürlich auch analoge Zeiten. Ihr Sebastian Mattes.
KI wird Ihr Business verändern. Wie können Sie davon profitieren? Tyler Wessing ist eine internationale Wirtschaftskanzlei. Weltweit arbeiten wir mit Technologieführern und Innovationstreibern zusammen. Wir beraten Sie bei Fragen zu strategischen Akquisitionen oder der Entwicklung konkreter Anwendungsszenarien, genauso wie zum Schutz des geistigen Eigentums oder zum KI-Recht. Investieren Sie in KI. Entwickeln Sie sich weiter mit KI. Mit uns. Wir wissen wie. Tyler Wessing.